morning and welcome to the Athenaeum Review podcast. I'm Ben Lima and I'm very happy to be here today with Erica Das, who is the author of Spiritual Moderns, 20th Century American Artists and Religion, which is out now from University of Chicago Press and which was just a few days ago the subject of a very important roundtable discussion at the College Art Association Conference. So it's an important and very interesting book, and thank you for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
I'll start with a follow-up from what we were speaking about a minute ago and just ask why you wrote this book.
Okay. This book really got started when I was invited to participate in the project that was organized by the art historians David Morgan and Sally Promy, which was called the Visual Culture of American Religions Project. And this was in the late 90s or so. And they were sort of driven into asking the same sort of questions that I ask in this book, which is, why don't we talk more about or even think more about religion in the making and meaning of American art in general? Now, for that project, which was a terrific project, series of seminars and symposia, it ultimately resulted in a book, The Visual Culture of American Religions. For that project, I wrote an essay on the contemporary American artist Robert Gober, a queer Catholic artist and a man of faith who wants to be Catholic, whose work reflects on his Catholic upbringing and his Catholic faith, but veers off into very different directions in terms of sort of standard or institutional understandings of what Catholicism is all about. So it was a really great exercise for me to explore these sort of intersections between art and faith, and the contemporary furor, and particularly in the contemporary art world, over those intersections. So I decided, on the basis of doing the research for that project, not much has been done with modern and contemporary American artists and the subject of religion. Maybe I should explore this. So I originally thought, I'll do a huge universal survey of American artists and religion from pre-colonial times to the present, and quickly realized that this was way too much to do. So I decided to focus on American modernism, and I decided to focus on American moderns who are considered canonical American moderns, but who are also religious. And that's really how the project started, picking canonical American moderns, finding artists who didn't exactly, you know, announce loudly or profess their religious faith, which was part of the interesting aspect of writing this project, but who were nevertheless modern artists who were religious. And then asking the second question, which is, why haven't art historians, American art historians in particular, paid more attention to these intersections of art and faith in their discussion of American modernism? I mean, we do everything else. Art history has remarkably expanded in terms of the inclusion these days of race, class, gender, ethnicity, sexual difference, sexual identity, but not religion. So the book is largely about how American modernism was shaped and who shaped it, critics, historians, the artists themselves, but from the 1920s through the 1960s, focusing on a set of artists.
There's so much there that's so interesting, and I'll follow up, but let me just ask at the moment whether the response so far to the book has it been what you expected, or do you think that it's been well understood, or are there things that people seem to miss?
I think the book is well respected because I think, based on the roundtable last week at College Art Association and in my conversations with graduate students, other scholars, it's a kind of project that people have been waiting for and wanting, in that what I really struggled with in the book and hopefully, you know, offer is a methodology on how to even do this work. You know, how do we think about religion and art? And in particular, narrowing down my sort of borders and framework here, religion and American modern art. I mean, how do we even do this? Where do we start? What are the most important questions to ask? So for example, at the conference, one young graduate student came up to me and said, I really think this is a great project. This is really helpful. I'm a second year graduate student at whatever university. Right now I'm struggling with trying to figure out the differences between spirituality and religion. And I said, don't bother. Why would you spend your time doing that? William James said, just ask the right questions and explore what is religion, what are the effects, you know, what are the affective conditions of religion? You know, he's very much about the felt life of faith. How do those feelings manifest themselves? And then as art historians, we look for that manifestation in the material and visual culture project.
I wanted to follow up when you said a minute ago about carefully, you know, you chose artists who are canonical. I thought, okay, that's a very wise strategy because these are artists who are already firmly in the canon. They can't just be kind of dismissed as whatever. And then you're able to show that actually this is so central for what they're doing. But the question that I wanted to ask was actually about the term modern and your understanding of it. Because it's clearly not just a matter of kind of someone who happens to be working at a certain time. I was thinking, well, for instance, the people who painted the icons in the church that Warhol went to, I mean, they would be, you know, they would be working at the same time, but they're clearly not modern in the way that, say, Warhol is modern. So I wondered if you could maybe explain a little bit about kind of what it means for these artists or artists in general to be modern.
Sure. So let's take Warhol. Warhol's a great example. I don't think anybody's going to deny that Andy Warhol is one of the most prominent and important, significant modern artists of the 20th century in the United States and globally. He's also a devout Catholic who went to church several times a week, carried a rosary, carried a small missal, missile as in little prayer book. he was a man of faith and throughout his incredibly prolific career produced literally hundreds, if not thousands, of works that referenced his Catholicism. So I wanted to pick artists who were like Andy Warhol, clearly modern, but who were also engaged in religion practice, religious feelings, religious faith, religious belief. But I also wanted to make some really clear distinctions. Andy Warhol was a modern artist. Andy Warhol was not a religious artist. He was a modern artist who was religious. So then how, as art historians, we have to ask, does religion impact or influence the modern art that he made? Did it? And I wanted to argue that it did, in contradiction to most of the recent biographies, which tend to dismiss Warhol's Catholicism as something that I frankly don't think many people understand because they haven't put in the work to really understand these connections or intersections between his faith and his art production. And also because it's very unnerving for people to think, oh, there's something more than art, as in religious faith. But okay, so Warhol's a great example of modern. What did I mean by modern? I've always followed the line that Daniel Joseph Singal, an English professor, has sort of asserted about American modernism, which is American modernism is very different from other folks' modernism. American modernism is multiple, diverse, fluid, inexact, and unfixed. And in that way, we can let lots of folks be moderns. And today we use the term multiple modernities. So when I say canonical, what I don't mean somebody who is, you know, rigidly modern, but somebody who's engaged in the modern enterprise, which for me is maybe upsetting, disrupting, being unconventional, challenging what comes before, but at the same time, as a modernist, reconstructing, putting stuff back together, maybe answering some of the questions that you have in new and different ways. That's how I define modernism. And I think that that's what Warhol and the other artists that I talk about were really up to.
That makes a lot of sense. As I was reading the book, I was thinking about, you know, there is a kind of way of looking at religion that focuses on the kind of communal aspect. You know, you could, I mean, often assumed to be kind of pre-modern, that there's a group of people who are united by certain rituals and certain laws and, you know, a priesthood, et cetera, and there's certain, you know, essential things about what it means to be part of this religious community. But even before you said that, I was reading the book, I was thinking this is what they're all doing. I mean, it is very American. It's very modern. It's not like that kind of traditional or pre-modern sense of religion at all.
If I might explain what I mean too by religion.
Yeah.
Because part of the methodology of the book was to define modern,
yeah.
but also to define religion. Yeah. And I think a lot of people, a lot of art historians, veer away from religion because of presumptions about religious feeling, religious sentiment as something that is all-consuming, that is irrational, that doesn't allow individuality, eccentricity, difference. Yeah. I think that's a really narrow interpretation of religion. I mean, if I may,
please.
Religion constitutes, and I write this in the book, practices and attitudes such as rituals and beliefs that imbue a person's life with significance by linking her or him to a transcendent reality beyond purely immanent or secular experience and understanding. Religion is also broadly understood as an organized system of belief, Buddhism, Christianity, Islam, Judaism, that provides believers with understandings of the nature and order of existence, the meaning and purpose of life, moral codes of behavior, sources of spiritual inspiration, and concepts of the sacred. Importantly, religion in America is diverse and innovative. We do not have, contrary to all appearances otherwise, a state or nation state religion. Religion is diverse. It's also incredibly innovative in the United States. We have been host to many new and different religions from the Church of the Latter-day Saints to theosophy. In other words, religion in America is repeatedly negotiated to accommodate this nation's fluctuating demographics, democratic dynamics, and personal individual beliefs. And that's really where I start from.
Yeah.
Looking at religion as something that we choose, people choose, individuals choose,
yeah.
and then may or may not use as a sort of guide to shape and direct whatever art they might be producing. There are lots of modern artists out there who are religious who did not or do not include their religious faith or belief in their art production. And then there are also religious artists.
Yeah.
And in the book I discuss Warner Salmon, for example.
Yeah.
Warner Salmon in the 1940s produced the very famous picture of what I like to call the Aryan Jesus, which is the blonde Jesus with yeah. blue eyes. Incredibly popular image of Jesus produced by a man who was a commercial illustrator in Chicago, a very devout evangelical Christian.
Yeah.
More recently, people might recall Thomas Kincaid, who was also an evangelical Christian who created religious paintings, religious art. That's not Andy Warhol.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
not the other folks that I'm talking about in this book. So I think it is important to keep those kinds of distinctions valid between who's a modern artist that's religious and who's a religious artist. Religious artists proselytize.
Yeah.
Religious artists have a sort of bent, a goal, and
yeah.
that goal is to get everybody in the fold.
Yeah. I don't know if this would be kind of a valid way of putting it or not, but I was reading that kind of distinction that you're making. I thought it's, in a way, it's almost kind of a dilemma because, well, for the religious artist, they're kind of rooted in that particular community, and perhaps their work will only speak to people who are kind of in that group. But then the artists here are able to kind of maybe address a broader public, including those who are not kind of attached. But perhaps I can imagine members of a particular religious community saying, well, we don't really want to claim this artist because they're not really in line, like they're not really part of our religious group, they're too out there. So it's that sense of kind of attachment to a community versus the ability to speak beyond it is kind of a tension, maybe. I don't know.
No, I think that's a really good point. Although it's funny, these days there are some Warhols on the walls of Catholic churches, which sort of cracks me up. A good example of that is Mark Toby, the
right.
Baha'i artist, who would never say, I'm not a Baha'i artist, I'm a modern artist,
right.
and I'm Baha'i.
Right.
Baha'i claimed him as Baha'i and, revered him.
Yeah.
But they were also very careful to sort of, distinguish him as an artist.
Yeah.
And he made murals and paintings and all sorts of things for the Baha'i temples.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I mean, Agnes Pelton most liked audiences who responded to her work, which was grounded in everything from New Thought, Theosophy, to numerology and Agni Yoga. She wanted people, she was really most pleased when artists did respond in the ways that she wanted, particularly in terms of Theosophy's emphasis on light and rays. But she was okay with other responses as well. And I think Warhol is much the same. Joseph Cornell, of the four artists that I study, was probably the most caught up in this, in that he'd make these boxes, which were very much about the, you know, the problematic materiality, or denial of materiality that is core to Christian Science, which he followed for decades. And then he would sell the boxes or give the boxes away. And then he'd take them back because he was not comfortable with them being out of his control, perhaps, or being in the hands of folks who didn't actually share his beliefs. You know, he's complicated. You know, he's engaged in the production of things that almost went against his faith, but it was also his way of working out his beliefs.
One of the things that that was really fascinating to me, and you've alluded to it already, is, you know, there are these four. There's Baha'i, there's Christian Science, there's a kind of the occulture of Agnes Pelton, there's the Byzantine Catholic Warhol. I mean, these are such different kinds of traditions and communities, and I think it's fine kind of evidence of the kind of American plurality and pluralism that you described. So my question would be, you know, amongst these very different traditions, how you alluded to William James and you know Kandinsky is in there in the book. The question would be kind of what you think is most important in defining the kind of commonality amongst these very diverse, or you know, what makes them all something called religion as opposed to just totally different kind of cultures. It's kind of a William James or Kandinsky kind of understanding of what that is.
Right. I mean, I think both James and Kandinsky were very fluid in terms of saying, you know, so many things are religious and there are so many religious impulses. Other people would prefer to narrow it down. Yeah. I have a pretty loose understanding. As I said, I'm not particularly interested in trying to make distinctions between religion and spirituality. I understand that people, you know, do so.
Yeah.
I don't find it particularly fruitful. But the commonality was my question of what is all of this about in this particular religion? What do the followers of this particular faith believe in?
Yeah.
What are their central tenets of belief? And what I discovered, which I think is kind of interesting, is a lot of people are engaged in religion and religious practices and religious beliefs without really understanding what it is that they're engaged in, which has a lot to do then with communality, ritual, holidays, you know, something that brings people together, curative, healing.
Yeah.
Christian Science is all about, you know, the curative intention of Mrs. Eddy.
Yeah.
Going back to what she claimed was the primeval Bible, and claiming Jesus's, you know, earliest intentions, which was to heal the pain of the people of Earth. Very different from the organized religion that she actually grew up in, you know, mainstream Protestantism. But that was my central sort of ambition, trying to figure out what is this stuff all about?
Yeah.
And that's why it took me a long time to write this book. And B, I tried to develop a methodology for others. And the methodology is try to define what the religion is all about, how it emerged, what it was founded on, what its principal beliefs are, and what its rituals and practices are. So then I could get some insight into how my artist worked with and also challenged those rituals and beliefs. And Warhol is a great example of a devout Catholic who nevertheless, like Robert Gober, very much challenged the sort of constrictions of his Catholic faith, which, you know, denies homosexuality, doesn't believe that homosexuals are, going to go to heaven, very much an emphasis on death for sinners, etc. And you know, he's working as the AIDS crisis erupts. And he's furious about how many, and he's very worried about how many of his cohort are dying.
Yeah.
And the Catholic Church is ignoring it. And the general public is calling it the gay cancer. And he's painting it out in his hundreds of Last Supper canvases.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important, too, that people understand that these artists are not following in line.
Yeah, yeah.
Like some sort of, you know, lemurs in a religious cult.
Yeah.
But they're actually struggling with their faith. And I think that struggle is really significant.
Yeah.
I mean, faith is not all, you know, chipmunk happy. Faith is about, why do I believe this? What is this doing for me? And, it, you know, how can I be a better person? And these are all, you know, questions of struggle, questions of human dilemma.
Yeah.
Some religions demand certain things of people. Some religions demand more questioning, perhaps.
Yeah. You know, that sense, I mean, that's, I think, part of what makes the story so compelling is what you just described. I wanted to ask, you know, certainly in the introduction, and this will tie into something just before we started recording, you know, you referred to there's a certain perspective on this subject that's more on the kind of woo-woo side of things. And so I had that in mind, going back kind of in the history of the last decades, you know, as you show in the introduction, for a long time there was this very dominant, that you quote Clement Greenberg, Rosalind Krauss, T.J. Clark, you know, just complete absolute dismissal, like we're not interested in religion at all. And as I understand it, the reason, you know, that they would see anything religious is, on the one hand, maybe totally kind of authoritarian, the enemy of freedom, and then on the other hand, totally personal, private, woo-woo, arbitrary, subjective. Like, you know, it seemed to me that those who of that school want something that is, you know, they want something that's objective and real, and they see the kind of woo-woo as the enemy of that, and they also want something that reflects kind of the rational freedom of the artist to do something that's intelligible. And so anyway, that point of view, that dismissive point of view, was so influential. I mean, I think I said that was the version of modern art that I learned when I was studying modern art. Let me just ask, maybe, you know, it's certainly the tides have turned, times have changed. I wonder if you could just kind of describe maybe that trajectory of how that was dominant, and how, if you think it's less dominant at this point.
I think the tide has changed, not completely, but it's changed somewhat. Because once you introduce the idea of multiple modernities, and you're introducing gender, race, class, ethnicity, sexual difference, you're automatically imploding sort of the, you know, the bordered understanding of modernism is this.
Yeah.
It's many things, which means there are many influences and many directives and many ways to be modern.
Yeah.
And that includes the sort of work that I'm doing in this book, which, you know, religious influence, religious beliefs. There's still pushback because, quite frankly, I mean, given the religious cultural wars in this country and elsewhere, people continue to see religion as something that only the mindless sort of follow. And that once you're religious, you're non-thinking, you're irrational. And I think that that's both very intolerant and not very generous in terms of why people turn to religion in the first place.
Yeah.
A lot of people these days say, oh, I'm not religious, I'm spiritual. Yeah. Well, it's the same thing. You're looking, you're searching, you're trying to figure out, you're asking the big questions. And frankly, good for you.
Yeah.
You know, the person who doesn't ask those questions is perhaps the, you know, the mindless.
Yeah.
But asking those questions is hard.
Yeah.
Finding answers to those questions is hard, but that, I think, is, you know, part of being human on the planet.
Yeah.
I wrote this book because I'm not a person of faith, but I am absolutely fascinated by those who are.
Yeah.
And the ways that they manifest that faith. I mean, we supposedly live in a dominant Christian nation, which doesn't act very Christian. Yeah. And, you know, I sort of wanted to figure some of that out. I also wanted to figure out why these artists went down the roads that they did.
Yeah.
Joseph Cornell was an incredible pain.
Yeah.
Christian Science is a curative religion. Yeah. Andy Warhol grew up in a Byzantine Catholic religion where he was surrounded by icons. It's no surprise he's doing gold Marilyn.
Yeah.
You know, that's coming out of his religious upbringing, but it's also tinged by A, his years in advertising, and his focus on popular culture and celebrity, and B, his understanding that his religious beliefs were not exactly in sync with those of others.
Yeah.
So how could he sort of mess it up, which is also what modernism is all about. So
this is a bit of a tenet, but it crossed my mind when you were talking, and also previously, and that is about your own scholarship and your own experience. You've joined the faculty here at UT Dallas, which is a wonderful thing. And before that, you were at Notre Dame, which is obviously maybe the most prominent Catholic university in the country. And I just wondered if your experience, you know, being part of a university that it has that kind of identity, I mean, did that play into what you were doing at all or not so much?
Yes and no.
Yeah.
I actually started working on this project when I was at the University of Colorado at Boulder.
Okay. Right, right.
And I carried through, wrote a bunch of other stuff in between. It took a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, sort of sussing out the dynamics and the framework of these religions was incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
I'm not a religious studies scholar. And what I discovered was that most of these religions are written about by their practitioners.
Yeah. Yeah.
So trying to get some historical and critical distance, let alone criticism of, and I'm talking constructive criticism, of the particular religions is really difficult. But, you know, I sort of pushed my way through. I started with Cornell and ended up with Warhol. The Pelton chapter took a long time because she's just so diverse and interested in so many different new agey, if you will, sort of religious and spiritual dimensions. That's why I like that term occulture, which sort of combines them all. But no, I wouldn't say that being at Notre Dame was particularly helpful, but, you know, it was what it was.
Sure, sure. Well, this is... this sort of two questions, but it's two angles on the same question. I mean, I had the thought, you know, I was looking at these four, you know, very important artists, and I thought, okay, on the one hand, they're, you know, like, for instance, I learned a lot about Baha'i Christian Science. Like, I had the most superficial sense of what those are, which I learned, which was improved upon having read these chapters. So this was in the years when kind of the mainline Protestant establishment was so influential in the U.S. in a lot of ways. And none of these artists belong to kind of those mainline Protestant faiths. And then also, and I know this is tricky, and you're very careful to in the way you describe it, so correct me if I'm wrong, but none of them, let's say, you know, they all have, in terms of their gender identity and sexual identity, they're all at some distance from, let's say, the kind of norm. I mean, you talk about the way that Jackson Pollock almost kind of caricature of hyper masculine, you know, macho, heterosexual, whatever was elevated for that reason. You know, none of these artists fit into that kind of dominant identity. So I thought, okay, both in terms of their faith and then also in terms of their own personal identity in certain ways, they're all at a distance or even marginal from the kind of normative American identity. I mean, would you say that? It was clear that gives them some kind of maybe critical distance, kind of perspective that maybe the mainstream wouldn't have. I mean, how you understand that whole question?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I mean, as I was working on this, one person said, so let me get this straight. So most gay people who are Catholic, And I said, no. You know, but it does seem a little odd that there are gay Catholics and gay Catholic artists. And I mean, the last section of the book is about queer Catholic artists from Gober to Mapplethorpe to Serrano, who are struggling with, you know, what it means to be gay. Well, I mean, we could say all of these moderns are sort of non-normative because they're challenging normative, right?
Yeah.
I mean, modern is not about being complicit, but always constantly challenging. That's why modernism is a mess. Because it's, you know, as soon as it gets fixed, it has to get unfixed. I mean, it's not about stasis. It's about constant movement and disruption, which I think all of these artists are engaged in, and that's a little confusing.
Yeah.
But that isn't to say that there weren't moderns who were engaged in mainstream religions. For example, artists I didn't work on, Charles Birchfield, who right. took a Protestant religion towards the end of his life. There's so much more work to be done on Houston Conwell, African-American artist. I mean, that's sort of what I had hoped the, I hope the promise of this book is.
Yeah.
Hey, go discover your own artist out there because there's lots of them.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean it's the only pathway.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, religion is just one of many frameworks that artists use as they shape and direct their production.
Yeah.
But to ignore it, as it has pretty solidly been ignored, I think is to do disservice.
Yeah.
Plus, it helps you uncover some really interesting things about some of these artists.
Yeah. I mean, it's so rich. I mean, you can pick it up and tell how much went into it. And I'll just, for those who are listening, I'll just highlight that, although, these four artists are central, but I also particularly enjoyed, there's discussions of other artists. There's Corita Kent, there's Mina Loy, there's Marston Hartley. I mean, there's a lot in the kind of the connections among these four and their kind of peers, I thought was so fascinating.
Barnett Newman, Mark Barnett Rothko,
yeah.
artists who also went in and out of whether they were going to declare their religious faith.
Yeah.
Both Rothko and Newman are great examples of this, but then they're working in a post-war period that is both, post-World War II period, that is both uber religious, but not uber Jewish religious,
right?
Uber Protestant. And this is the moment in 1954 when we put "In God We Trust" on our dollar bills.
Yeah.
But these are artists who are also, back to Kandinsky, trying to make art that isn't just decorative wallpaper, and isn't a poster for a political party, but is something else. And it's that something else that these artists are engaged in. And for many of them, the words mysticism, religion, and spirituality come out of their mouths in their furtive attempts to try to explain what it is they're up to. Barnett Newman does a Stations of the Cross series, and he's Jewish.
This
outraged a lot of people, but it also intrigued a lot of people.
And
when it was shown in New York, tens of thousands of people showed up.
Reading that section, I had the thought, the kind of counterpart to this book, which I'd love to, not that you have to write it, maybe someone will write it, the talk about kind of the rise of New York, or New York, how New York stole the idea of modern art, or the kind of New York becomes the capital of modern art. I mean, in those books, if I recall, almost nothing is said about this being the home of, but one of the largest or the most important Jewish, like it's, all of these artists are probably only a few degrees of separation from Jewish religious communities, but it's, again, the kind of received wisdom is that, you become a modern artist and all that religion is over here.
I think that's changing. Yeah. Samantha Baskin, who teaches at Cleveland State University, has done some terrific work, as has Matthew Bagel, on recovering 20th century American Jewish artists who, they're definitely part of the New York movement and, New York's rise to modernism and modernity in general.
Yeah.
So, it has changed considerably, but
No, that's cool. Something that really, I think of all of these, the one I was probably most familiar with was Warhol for different reasons. And as I was going through that chapter, I wanted to ask you about, there's a section of the talk of his relationship to neoliberalism. And the question that I would put is that, so Warhol's embrace of business art, capitalism, commerce, however sincere or insincere or kind of tricky his persona is, I think there's a long tradition of whether you're a Marxist or, let's say, a traditionalist devoted to high culture, Warhol's kind of love of capitalism, if that's what it is a reason to be kind of dubious of, what's this guy doing? I mean, is it just about making money? But then in this chapter, I thought, how does that relate to his Catholicism? I wonder if you could just discuss kind of, is this marriage of religion and capitalism kind of like the most American thing that there is in a way?
I think it might be. I got started on that because of his money paintings.
Yeah.
And just the fact that he had been engaged with money making Yeah. I mean, he incorporated. He ran a corporation starting in the mid-50s. He's the highest paid advertising, commercial advertising agent in New York in the 50s. But it's not enough. He wants to be an artist, or he wants to be regarded as an artist. So he basically takes a major pay cut, but then goes off to even more fame and fortune through what he does with pop art and various other movements. Money is... He's very smart about the idea of money, the kind of faith that we put in money. Yeah. And money is paper.
Yeah.
And you know, once we got off the gold standard in 73, thank you, President Nixon, money, and he, and I think, and many of us are just fascinated with the kind of faith that we put in paper. And of course, that's all being challenged by cryptocurrency. But the fact that he was so blatant about it, and about painting money and about making money, that got up people's noses, particularly among Marxist critics, let's say. But it also became sort of the model. I mean, look at Damien Hirst. Look at Jeff Koons, right? All these guys are about money. And none of them, I think, are quite as critically engaged, perhaps, as Warhol himself was.
Yeah.
So in the money chapter, I wanted to go back to exactly what you said. Oh, yeah. You know, early Christianity, money, money making, where we put our faith, what kind of faith that we have. Yeah. They're all connected.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's so interesting. There's so much. I mean, we've only touched on a handful. I want everyone who's listening should immediately go and buy and read. There's so much in there, and the notes, the references are a gold mine too. Well, let me just end by asking if you might say a few words about kind of your current projects, what you're working on, what's coming up next.
Sure. I keep thinking, you know, there's a lot more to do, spiritual moderns. But right now I'm pretty much engaged in projects pertaining to memorials, monuments.
Yeah.
And I'm finishing up a book titled Monuments Are Mortal, which is about issues of permanence and what I call cultural vandalism.
Yeah.
With basically the premise, nothing lasts forever.
Yeah.
So let's start thinking about why we're so concerned about issues of fixity or permanence.
Yeah.
But I also want to write a book, or I'm working on a book called Troubling Memorials, which literally uses the word trouble to try to explain why we're troubled by and why we trouble with memorials and monument making. So I'm sort of venturing in those directions. I'll tell you, I'm going to write a book. I want to write a book called I Am America, which is about a fabulous religious cult that started in 1934 in Chicago. So I don't want to leave the world of art and religion behind.
Yeah.
And I hope to return to it. Another book would be Faith in Transit. A friend and I have been wanting to write a book on airport chapels for a long time. So we're basically flying around the world taking pictures of really cool airport chapels. And you got to ask yourself why.
Yeah.
And they're busy. People are there.
Yes.
And nobody has really written about it.
Oh my gosh.
There's even an airport chapel association, and they have an annual meeting every year.
This
is real. Yeah. So I'm looking for a photographer who might want to play with this project, but I think it could be a fantastic, fantastic book.
Okay. Well, that's so much to look forward to. Well, we've been speaking today with Erica Doss, the author of Spiritual Moderns, 20th Century American Artists and Religion, which is available now from University of Chicago Press. Thank you again for being here.
Thank you, Ben.
And you can find out more at AthenaeumReview.org. ¶¶